information, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Hi, it's Monday, July 16, 2012, 2 weeks after Ian Crane spoke in Brighton at the Occulture Festival. And I'm at a very, very windy Ho seafront at Grand Avenue, awaiting the arrival of the Olympic torch in a few minutes. So just a chance to see a bit firsthand of a local connection to what's going on. So you may hear a bit of cheering and that'll be about it. It'll go past just to see what the atmosphere is like anyway. Well, there's a guy still at Union Jacks walking along. It's been incredibly bad weather. Been following it on the radio earlier today as it passed through Worthing, but the whole of the England, southern England's been absolutely grey and rainy for weeks and weeks. So whether that's a sign of weather wars going on, I don't know. Maybe it'll clear up for the Olympics themselves, but it's a strange sort of dark recession hit country with grey weather over it. And this is maybe a little bit of bread and circuses going on, but hopefully everyone has a good time anyway. But I'm not sure what time this thing's actually due. I think it's 6:23. I know it was 6 o'clock a little while ago, so probably quite soon. There's a coach driving down south along Grand Avenue. I'm not sure what's that got to do with it. Motorcade of some sort. German build. It's Michel Reusson. German tourist, maybe. Well, I just heard it's running 20 minutes late because of the traffic, so just going to wait around a bit more. It's not raining, but looking forward to getting to the pub. Was the bus here with Torch Rally 2012 on it. So we're seeing a lot of buses coming by. One of those one-eyed characters looking out the window. A sticker on the window, one of the mascots. I think something might be coming past soon. It's a police motorbike. I probably won't see much. I've got quite a good view, but I'm not standing right near the road. I want to just take in the whole scene, really. If my stereo is working right, it should come from the right channel of this audio, which is north, to the left channel, which is south. So you might be able to tell that when you're listening to it. It's a blue flashing light coming down. Two motorbikes. Probably over so fast. Some megaphone instructions. Unfortunately, my view's blocked a bit by some park vans just to my north, so I can't quite see the road there. I've got a very good view nearby, though, when it actually passes. Yeah. Oh, it's another bike. I'm not sure what I'm looking for, you know, if there's going to be some sort of thing in front of it or just a torch comes by and that's it. You kind of expect someone to announce it. I think there might be something about to happen. There's a blue light flickering over there to the north. That banging you can hear is people with like Olympic frisbees kind of banging them like tambourines, so it's quite a nice sound effect. Police lady sort of skipping by there. I'm getting a lot of active police officers. I haven't seen an athlete yet. Well, the rain's beginning to blow up a little bit. This looks like the moment could be coming. Police car going past. A horrible Olympic mascot being waved, a little cuddly toy, and slight pause. Yeah, my view is slightly blocked by a silver van in front of me, so things come past there very quickly. There's a lot of cameras being waved, waiting for something to come through. Was a coach coming along. I don't know if anyone's running in front of it. The torch relay 2012 on it. It's going very slowly. So I imagine someone would be behind that. And there's another car in front of it. With Olympic colours on it. Yellowy white colours. They certainly spent a lot of money on the livery and all these various vehicles. Another car. It's like a Kennedy motorcade. So I can't see the whole route, you see. I can't tell what's actually coming on down behind that. This guy's with the Union Jacks selling them, so... souvenir medals. Genuine plastic. There's a sort of blue lit up thing down there coming along, so. There's a big van coming on with Coca-Cola. Written on the front, so it's your healthy corporate sponsor. I'm actually at Sir King's House, which in Brighton is run by the Green Party. It's the HQ of the council, so they shouldn't really like these corporate sponsors, but they are going to be at a reception, I hope, cricket ground after this. The route loops around 100 yards to my left, to the south, along the seafront, and then it comes back up again. Another road up to the cricket ground. Great Britain, celebrate your... celebrate your future flame, as it says in there. Great Britain, celebrate... Yeah, that was a Coca-Cola shot. Great Britain, celebrate your future flames. Whatever that means. And it's a blue lorry. It's got like a plasma screen, or not plasma, but LED TV on the side. Various sporting images. Cheerleaders on top in blue. I have to move back a bit, it's the sound. The sound level's a bit much. This is sponsored by Samsung.
Good afternoon, everyone!
Various logos appearing on that. It's turning into a kind of Hove Limestone Carnival or something that a Rotary Club would organise, but done with more money. Some characters in green running along. I love waving characters, some more green waving characters sponsored by Lloyd's TSB. Sort of a weird bus conversion type thing. Another coach with that horrible one-eyed character on the side. So two police and still no torch, so. Torch has gone up another road. Some sort of big motorcade type effort. Yeah, get your Coca-Cola, pay for it all. I'm just waiting now for the main attraction. I don't think this alarm has anything to do with the event, it's just something happening nearby. Yeah, well, it's a few minutes later, they still have a taste of Coca-Cola. The last thing you need is a nice cold bottle of Coca-Cola in this weather. A cup of tea maybe might be good. I'm not sure how long the pause would be, that's the trouble, I'm still recording, but there's little more to say really. But obviously there's been lots of controversy in the press this week about Group 4 security not having enough guards to guard the venues, so I think the army have been brought in, and I think the police know as well to take the place of some of them. So that's quite local, they're based in Crawley, Group 4 security, so that's a few miles up the road from here. So hopefully, you know, there won't be any problems, but obviously, if you heard Ian R. Crane's speaking about this sort of thing, you'd certainly be concerned. I just hope it all goes off okay. There's some more white vans coming by. I think we've got sight of it now. Yeah, there's a blue flashing light back there, and there's more of these Olympic vans. Loads of them. Who's in these vans, you know? But yeah, there's a big crowd running down the pavement towards us. Sort of must be running along with it, waving some Union Jacks, which they probably just bought off that guy who's making a bit of money today. Probably had them left over from the Jubilee. And, moment to shine, it says on the front of this van. Quite a tough looking vehicle. There's the cameras on the back. Yeah, it's obviously a press van. Here we are. Oh, there it is. It's got this orangey little flame on top of a cone going past down to the statue there. There's some bikes behind it and another coach, yes. Just got to the seafront. Well, I'm going to walk along with this over the grass. Traffic sort of stopped. I've got to be careful, there's a lot of wind here. I can't really record very well. Traffic sort of stopped on the edge of the main road there on the corner, so the torch is in amongst that lot somewhere. I've actually lost sight of the torch now. Oh, there it is, there's a flame over there. And I'm not sure if that's... It looks like I've set fire to something. Oh no, there is a torch, just on top of someone's head in perspective. It looked like someone's head was on fire for a minute. It's moving along again. Very grey seafront. It's obscured by some plants in the foreground, so I'm just moving east. I'm going to go through the hedge. Carry on. Probably just in time to miss it going past. We get my wire caught up on a branch. But a coach is just moving there. And I think it's gone past me now. Yeah, I'm certainly not going to go running along. It's the photographer's running along with big lenses chasing after it. Then there's the coach. Torch Rally 2012 going by, police car making a funny noise. And general area of that kind of, you know, group is chasing something. You get a pop concerts and stuff like that. Just going to move back. So I've got a lot of dangly wires here. But there you go, that's Olympic torch. Olympic flame in the rain. That's a good name for this. And the rain is just beginning to really pour down now, actually, just as I say that. I think we just managed to get that in before the weather really tipped down. Clouds sort of going into a bit of chaos now, dispersing quite a lot. Okay, well, I'm going to head along for that burger and beer, I think, and maybe we'll have another reflection on this later on. Well, when I got home from all that, this was a message on my answer phone.
You have one message one.
Pete, I just wondered if you knew I was all set to watch this programme on BBC Two at 9 o'clock about the aftermath of riots last summer. The programme has been pulled. No explanation given. It just said, and now with a change to the advertised programme, Operation Crossbow, about how, you know, Spitfires filmed Hitler's missile bases, etc. How bloody odd is that? Why on earth they would do that, I don't know. That makes you wonder something's about to happen. Anyway, I'll see you.
Well, hi Nigel. You've been watching all this Olympic stuff and listening on the radio, reading it in the local paper. How do you feel? Do you think it's a bit of a jamboree, or do you think it's justified, all the hullabaloo?
No, I don't think it's justified. I don't want to sound like a killjoy, but frankly, if I had any interest in the Olympics, which I don't, you know, it would have died off several years ago, because, I mean, I didn't even realise it was 7 years. I heard on the radio it was 7 years since we were granted the Olympics.
Yeah.
And frankly, in this country, I have to say, if there's one thing we're absolutely brilliant at, it's overkill. I mean, I love the football, but I was glad when the European Championships were over. I don't mean just as England went out in the quarterfinals, but every radio break, every advert break on telly, you know, it's, oh, football, 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 football. Then it was Wimbledon now, you know, it's, and all along, in between all this, we've had the Olympics. You know, I don't know, it's far too commercialised. I think they just, in the end, they kill people's interest off, and I've heard a lot of people say this.
Yeah, the great summer of sport, it was all billed as, and of course England always loses, or we lose the tennis as well.
Well, at least Andy Murray got into the final, and I watched the men's final for the first time in years. It was thoroughly entertaining. That
yeah.
Let me down.
Well, you told me something very interesting on the message last night, the main reason I got back to you, about a programme about riots that was cancelled, is that correct?
It's most bizarre, because it was billed as BBC 2 about the...
Yeah.
It was billed on BBC Two, if I flip this page, on habit.
Yeah.
As the riots. Oh, here it is, 9 o'clock, BBC Two. The riots, in their own words, part one of two. Eyewitness accounts of last August disturbances, and with no warning. I mean, I put the thing, you know, the TV guide.
Mm.
I thought, well, I'll take that. And it simply said. The programme has been changed. I actually had it on live, rather.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tape it as well, but when it came to the thing, the next programme, they said, has been rescheduled for a later date.
That's interesting.
I thought, well, is there a riot going on somewhere that I'm not aware of?
So when they say later date, do they mean after the Olympics?
Maybe. Say, Peter.
No. Well, obviously, they've decided obviously they were doing it because it was around the anniversary, not 10th anniversary, the first year's anniversary. And they've obviously decided to pull it, thinking it might stir things up or remind anybody. And
but it happened in the case, Peter, why on earth did they have it, you know, from the weekend when they released these schedules? Why didn't they think of that before? I mean, it really did puzzle me, as did something else. I came in today, having a very busy day, and I came in, I normally watch BBC One at 6 o'clock, put the ITV news on just in time to see the headlines, and a couple found dead in a car in a tunnel after a landslide. And the phone rang, my neighbour, so I had to nip in next door, and she got it up on her iPad.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been there, buried under mud, for 10 days. Now, this is meant to be a road in Dorset, I think.
Well, this is because all the rain, isn't it? Subsidence of land, it's a landslide.
Well, yes, but what puzzled me was, how come? If it was the only car, I don't quite get it. We couldn't get any further information.
Yeah.
How come that nobody realised two people were buried in a car for 10 days? It seems bizarre. It's one of the oddest things I've ever heard.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, and when you're hearing all this other stuff about Olympics, it stands out, doesn't it, when you hear something serious?
Yes, it does. It comes out at you.
And because we have, well, of course, there's the other angle of all these security guards and stuff in the news about them not turning up or not being enough of them, and the police being brought in and the army.
I mean, I don't know what to make of that. I mean, well, one, I mean, I'm totally opposed to privatising things. I'm opposed to cutting the numbers of police and the army, particularly for the state of the world at present. I mean, I think it's nothing short of madness, but I just find it incredible to believe these people. I mean, I saw that on the news tonight, a part of it, where the two guys from D4S were being interrogated by a parliamentary committee. Now, Keith Vaz was chairing it, a Labour MP, and he said, you know, do you think is it 57 million? I think 57 million pounds. Do you feel you're entitled to the 57 million pounds you've had? There was a pause, then, yes. You hesitated before you answered, said he. And I mean, that did beggars belief. I mean, if they were having problems recruiting people, why now? I'm very suspicious about that.
Well, I heard earlier it's because they have a thing called just-in-time delivery, but it's the thing you often get in business, where they do things just-in-time and it saves costs of warehousing and stuff. Well, they've applied the same principle, but it means that it's so hard to get everybody at the last minute, all through the security checks and everything they've got to do. So you end up with a silly situation where they just don't have enough to be trained in time. You just can't do it. Even if you had all the staff there, you couldn't really train them in time now.
But how many years ago, I wonder, I don't know the answer to this, maybe you know, how long ago were D4S awarded that contract?
I don't know, but I think it's at least a year ago. So they should really have had been geared up, given that they're in the security business.
Well, if you want an honest opinion, Peter, I don't think I'd love to think T4S were the culprits, because they've got an absolutely rotten track record of managing prisons. Whatever they touch seems to turn to dust.
They were a notorious group for security, of course. It's what they tried to hide their name, didn't they?
Well, exactly. But if you want my honest opinion, I don't think they're the villains of the PC. I think the government intended all along to surround the Olympics with troops.
Well, if this was,
and they're having a star chamber trial, but I reckon that 57 million quid and whatever else they'll have for doing nothing. That's why I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, to me, how on earth, it beggars belief, how could this happen? Why, Labour's Harriet Harman was interrogating Theresa May in the Commons yesterday, and she said exactly the same thing. She said it beggars belief, and so it does.
So you're saying it beggars belief, therefore maybe we shouldn't believe it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't believe it, Peter.
Well, we're putting the bits of the jigsaw together, aren't we? Because it means, if it was deliberate, it means they had an excuse to get more police and army there. But I don't think anyone would begrudge them that. So why do it this way, unless they want to militarise the whole thing?
Well, I just don't know. But I mean, I'm highly suspicious. I mean, the fact that they're planning to install, they probably already have installed, I would imagine, you know, surface-to-air missile sites.
Yeah, they've already installed them, yeah.
And Britain's most powerful, well, they're claiming it's the most powerful warship we have anchored in the Thames, and yet somebody in the pub last night who turned out to be a member of UKIP said actually it's alive. It's not the most powerful warship we have. That is currently hovering around the Falkland Islands. Well, I don't know how true that is. But put it this way, how on earth would they be able to use missiles, never mind the most powerful warship, in the centre of one of the most densely populated cities on Earth?
Well, they'd have to fire at something coming in from a long way away, wouldn't they? Like a plane or a missile or something. It probably wouldn't matter where the warship actually was in that sense, unless you're using it as a base of some sort. But these missiles on council flats, I mean, they have been challenged, but it's been thrown out of court. Obviously, it wasn't going to get a fair trial. So they're not allowed to challenge that. Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess the decision's been made because it's military. They're not part of the planning law. They just say, well, it's like not a war zone, but they're almost treating it like one where it overrides the normal planning procedure.
Normal rules don't apply.
No. I think, what sort of image is this going to give to the world? I mean, they're obviously going to be following all this. And of course, if there is any sort of security problem, even without going into conspiracies about false flag 9/11 type stuff, just even a small demo or a breach or some nutter having a go at something, you're always going to get some incidents. So you get them on a Saturday night in West Street. So,
well, exactly. And I mean, I've long been a believer that if you overdo it with the security, I mean, it's like Smash Edo marches in Brighton. Smash Edo marches are small. And I mean, you know, I neither condone nor condemn Smash Edo. I know too little about them. Mm. But if I'm able to, I generally, you know, walk around and see what's going on because I like to see with my own eyes and hear with my own ears exactly what's going on. And frankly, I mean, it's a sledgehammer taken to a walnut. You know, the massive police presence. And I mean, they all look like something out of the RoboCop movie. This isn't British police. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, that sort of thing stokes up, you know, the other side. It stokes them up to do the same. And the worst thing of the lot, I think all this overdoing things with security, I mean, I'm sorry, but there are any number of loose cannons and deranged people around, you know, at the moment. No disrespect to anybody, but if I were a terrorist, I'm sure I would feel inclined to say, oh, right, well, you're not going to keep me out with all this. I'd far rather see things done low-key. I mean, whatever happened to our SAS?
To what, sorry?
Nobody ever knew they were. Yeah. All the SBS, and they got the job done. The Iranian embassy seized when Maggie Thatcher first came to power. Bang, flash, it's all over. No one even knew they were there. I mean, who or what are they trying to do with this? Turn us into a war zone, a militarized country? They couldn't be going about it better if that was their intention.
Well, do you remember a few years ago when in Iraq War, I think it was, when they had that tank at Gatwick Airport?
Yes,
for some reason. And it was just a way of showing, you look, you know, there's a threat and we want to put something there to sort of scare you a bit. And it's a bit like that, but much bigger, you know.
Well, Peter, the history of terrorism the world over has proven the point that, you know, it doesn't matter how much of a military firepower you have. I mean, look at Vietnam with the Viet Cong, the Pathet Lao in Laos, the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. America was the most mighty military machine the world had ever seen, and despite they just carpet bombed those countries, the guerrillas undermined them, and they don't seem to learn lessons from this, do they?
Mm. Well, to wrap it up here, will you be watching the opening ceremony, which is coming up obviously in a few days' time, really, barely even 2 weeks, not even 2 weeks?
Well, I may not, the jury's out. I mean, you know, I know people say it's a part of history, and I know so many people who took days off work, you know, to watch the torch-bearing thing and what have you, but I have to be honest with you, Peter, I'm not a person for all this hype.
No.
I like to think I've got my feet more rooted on the ground. We're in the middle of a depression. It isn't a recession. And all this hype, I suppose this is meant to divert people from it. And at the risk of sounding a terrible killjoy, I would have thought the vast sums of money that they must have been spending on this could surely be put to better use in the current times. I may watch it. It's a historical thing. Then again, I might be so utterly bored with it by then that I'll just go out and have a pint.
And it'll be on the TV in the pub. It'll be on the TV in the pub.
Not the pub I go in.
Oh, well, okay, well chosen.
Nice old local.
So it's Nigel and Hove, they're avoiding the Olympic hype. Okay, that's a nice ending.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology. Paul Dixon and I started the information magazine in 1997, feeling there was a whole strand of discussion within the areas of ecology and the paranormal, which was not being catered for. My involvement in green activism was stimulating, but at times I felt disillusioned by the compromised, top-down nature of some campaigns. It would be good to have a neutral place to analyse these concerns. By chance, I also met a group of researchers who were into crop circles and the investigation of the possibly faked nature of the Apollo moon landings. We made this the main feature of issue one. The information also provided an outlet for contributors marginalised by the mainstream magazines. We didn't care about scruffy manuscripts or no SAE enclosed. One artist illustrated our first issue after being badly burnt in a house fire, while another wrote an article in prison. I felt the Fortean Times had lost much of its edge in pandering to mainstream newsstands and was keen to keep the small press flavour of the information. We avoided Nessie and Falling Fish type stories, good though they might be. We had become more concerned by the urgent state of the world's eco-political crisis and were happy to say it loud and proud, we are conspiracy theorists. Or as we came to prefer, conspiracy researchers, which didn't quite have the same ring. The information ran up to the millennium with a bumper issue 4 in late 1999. I had always intended it should end there, at the brink of a new century, hoping it might shed a little light on the future.
Well, we're back after the break there. That was an interesting bit of audio. You often hear it, of course, at the start of our programmes, and it was released on a CD some years ago called Echoes of Conspiracy, which had a number of tracks on it about conspiracy topics, not surprisingly. And that was talking about the original zine we published back in the 1990s up to the millennium, which had lots of UFO stories and green issues and stuff going on in it. Very, very good at the time, but it was kind of pre-9/11 stuff, might look a bit innocent now. But that told you how it started up, and we take the start of that and use it in this new version of the information. I think it works very well, but we always clip the audio before you hear the rest, a bit like Alan Watt does with the music at the end of his talks you may have heard on cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And Alan, of course, plays Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street, which is a great, great song, and you always get the start and you don't quite get the lyrics. Anyway, the Olympics, yeah. Well, you would listening to Nigel there the other day, and we moved on a bit now. It's now the weekend. It's the 21st of July. Things have been holding up. I mean, the Group 4 thing has been in the news a great deal, but there's been a lot of developments. I've been doing some various research on the internet about this Olympic stuff, come up with some interesting stuff. But it's been a horrifying development in Denver, Colorado, on Friday. Not directly to do with the Olympics, but certainly to do with terror. At midnight, I'm not sure what time zone that's in, but we got the news during Friday, but effectively at midnight local time, there was a screening of a new film, The Dark Knight Rises, the new Batman film, the third and last in the trilogy. I'm not quite sure why it has to be the last, but they've obviously decided to just make it a finite series. Anyway, a gunman, James Holmes, burst in, masked up, opened fire. At first, it seemed like they thought it was some sort of stunt, something to do with the film, but then it became clear that it was actually real munitions being fired, and the place was evacuated. Sadly, there were deaths involved. You'd have heard this in the mainstream media, of course. Currently, as I'm speaking, the police in America are, you know, trying to get into the apartment. They call it a flat in the UK here. But they've been calling it a flat, but an apartment, as it would be in the US, booby-trapped. Interesting, though, James Holmes gave himself up to the police very easily. And he said, you know, don't go into my apartment. It's booby-trapped. Strange thing to do if you're trying to cause a lot of mayhem. And just reading a little bit about it off Infowars.com earlier today, he had, I think, $20,000 of munitions and body armour and stuff. This guy's meant to be a medical student, not particularly well off. It did say unemployed. I'm not sure whether that means he's not working or he's just studying, but you wouldn't expect him to be able to go out and spend $20,000 on munitions very easily. So we haven't maybe heard all of this. I'm not going to say conspiracy, but it'd be very convenient if this was causing terror, choosing this particular film. I mean, I'm a fan of the Batman films. I wasn't too keen on the second one. I thought the first one was excellent, but the second one rambled a bit. I'm not terribly keen on Christopher Nolan, to be honest, as a director, but he has some great visuals and stuff in it, great performances from Michael Caine particularly, and Heath Ledger, of course. But it's getting darker and darker here. The look of Batman almost looks like the kind of rubber kind of suit you get the police wearing now at demos, and he's meant to be the good guy, and you get Bane, the bad guy, with a mask in the Joker Batman, when Heath Ledger was playing it, of course, at the start of the film, from what I remember, he was masked up in a gas mask and doing a robbery. So he was Joker, but also wearing a mask, and this is what this guy, James Holmes, apparently was doing. He was done up as the Joker, but wearing a mask. But because he goes into this particular Batman film, you might think it's Bane, the new character, who is kind of masked up in the film or wearing some sort of prosthetic thing over his face. I'm not sure if it's a mask or some sort of life support system in the film. But it's quite horrible. It's almost like... it means that this film now is associated with violent things happening in real life, and it's going to be hard to go in and see it really and not think of this. And I think it's quite disturbing. I mean, I will still see it, I think. It's very, very long, which is a bit off-putting, and I would never like to go to a midnight screening of a film that long anyway, but it does make it a horrifying association. You know, when you get something good that you're looking forward to and then something bad happens, it puts trauma onto it. And the same with the Olympics. You know, we're looking forward to it. Well, I'm not particularly, but let's say the mainstream is. I mean, I might watch a bit of it and enjoy some of the spectacle of it, but let's say, you know, we're meant to be looking forward to the sports anyway if we're interested in that. But then, you know, you've got all this stuff about Group 4 going on, putting a shadow over it. Just returning quickly to John Holmes, I won't go on about that too much. But apparently Hillary Clinton and President Obama are signing a gun control treaty on the 27th of July, which is a Friday, next Friday, the day the Games opens. So it's quite convenient for this to have happened a week before. Again, maybe they need that to happen in order to sign the treaty and make Obama seem a good guy. But they've almost got the right film coming out at the right time to do it as well, which is strange in itself. I'm not accusing the filmmakers of anything. I think they've been hijacked at some point. There's very strong pop culture imagery there, and it's an ideal thing to use. You could equally have used another Terminator-type film or whatever was being released at the time to create that same effect. But you need a film with lots of action in it and use of guns. Something like The Expendables 2 could have been another film they could have used, but this one is obviously a much more monumental release, and it's got those iconic characters, which, as I said, not only was he dressed as a Joker, but Batman himself is the law and order, of course, and he looks almost like the sort of black military uniforms the police are wearing now. I mean, Batman of old wore a kind of bluish kind of lycra or nylon type of suit in the 60s, and in Tim Burton's version he got a bit more kind of beefed up, but they seem to be taking it more and more into this kind of military look. And of course in the story he is runs an arms company, so it's not surprising maybe. But it kind of mixes fact and fiction really a little bit there. You start to not quite know which side you're on. I mean, if this guy James Holmes really was obsessed by these films, you know, you'd think he'd want to go and watch them loads of times rather than almost missing the premiere by doing this, and now he's going to be in prison for the rest of his life. And it could be that he is a mind-controlled person. I mean, he's a medical student. He's been studying neuroscience. He's apparently been involved with some experiments. So if he'd been taking drugs and had suggestions made to him, maybe he was triggered to do this because he gave himself in very meekly to the police and MK Ultra. these sort of techniques have been used in the past to do this, using Manchurian candidates. Manchurian candidates come from a film of the same name, but it's a title that's now given often to mind-controlled operatives. So that could be what's going on here. Don't want to say it's definitely that, but keep an open mind on that one. And certainly wish them well getting into the apartment. Hope there's no further injuries or deaths involved there. But turning back to the Olympics, I think we've covered that point there. Yeah, I've been, you know, obviously listening to Ian Crane the other week, and then things been breaking in the news, as you would expect, particularly with the Group 4 business and all that mania in Hove the other day with the torch. And the torch went in and around our town, along the coast to Hastings. It's now gone up to London. As of today, it's going round all the London boroughs. So it's going to be doing that for the next week with similar scenes to the one you heard earlier in this programme repeated. So we don't need to go chasing it around everywhere. You'll get the same kind of thing until it goes into the stadium at the end of the week. And Ian's actually doing another talk, in fact, in London on Wednesday in Camden. And I had the details written down here before I turned the page. Yeah, it's going to have Ben Fellows, who was either undercover or a whistleblower from Group 4 Security. He's going to be talking as well. And a guy called Tony Gosling, who I have met a long time ago. He's a friend of a friend of ours. I think he's written for Nexus magazine, and he made a big study of the Bilderberg Group. And I'm not quite sure what aspect Tony's talking on, but he'll be talking about some aspect of it. And it's at the Holiday Inn, Camden Lock, which is on Jamestown Road, Camden, NW1, starting at 7:30. Well, I think Ben is talking first, then Tony, then Ian later on. So it goes on to about 10 o'clock probably. It's £12 on the door, £10 through Ian's website. If you just Google Ian R. Crane, you'll find that. I'm hoping to go. Not sure if I'm going to yet. I'm not booked, basically, so I'll just go up. I may try and actually go up to look at the Olympic Stadium on the same day, get a tube over to Stratford, have a look at that, and then go to Ian's talk. So if I do, and if I get a recording, we'll no doubt stick it out on the information, maybe even before the Olympics start, but if not, following on fairly rapidly from that. And we also hope to be watching the opening ceremony on Friday the 27th. Me and Martin, who works on his channel as well, does a great deal of work for it. He runs the whole thing, basically, from our secret location. And we will no doubt bring our sceptical views to bear on the whole thing. Of course, Ian was showing some imagery the other week in the talk, which we did put out, that he gave, you may have heard. And it did seem to be a very strange grey effect going over a map of London laid out in the stadium with a kind of death type figure in the middle. It was very hard to make out because it was a photo taken from the air, and it's a rehearsal of the thing in progress, but we don't really know what this opening ceremony is exactly going to entail. But it's going to have imagery about the countryside and Arcadian imagery, we believe, which is rather ironic because this week we have the dairy farmers of Britain are up in arms, and they're not getting enough money for their milk. They're actually being paid less than the amount it costs to make, or not make, but, create it or whatever they have to do in the dairy. I'm not sure what the word is for as a verb, but making the milk at the farm anyway to get it to the point of selling it to the supermarkets, they're now being paid less than the cost of doing it. It'd be better for them just to not do it or pour it down the drain. They may not even get any money then, but it's less of an insult than taking a loss. So they're actually blockading various dairies at the moment. And this is going on, this is the real countryside, when you've got this thing about the Arcadian countryside being shown in a stadium, completely fake version of the countryside, we imagine. We haven't seen it yet. We'll have to withhold judgment to some degree. But, obviously it's going to be a pastiche of some sort. I think it's going to involve real animals. I did have an email through from an animal rights group saying to, tell them not to bring real animals in because they'll be frightened by the crowds and stuff. And I did, I did send a protest email in, like we do with many, many such causes, but it's probably been ignored. But at least the attempt was made there. And so it remains to be seen quite how literal this is to a real vision of the countryside. Very Arcadian and false in one way, or if it's a very stylized thing. I think if I was doing it, I'd probably do something very stylized. I mean, China did an amazing opening ceremony, I remember 4 years ago, and had all the dancers and that moving in patterns. And you could do something like that and have green and blue, you know, blue for the sky, green for the grass, this sort of thing. And that might look good, but it doesn't involve any animals. You just have to have lots of performers doing it. Because the whole thing about these Olympic opening ceremonies is they have to fill a huge area, really. They have to look good from a long distance. You can't have anything too subtle. It's a bit like street theatre at a huge scale. You really can't have little tiny subtleties going on, because you won't be able to follow it. Anyway, yeah, looking at some videos on YouTube, I mean, one you may want to look at is Rockefeller Foundation predicts 13,000 to die from bombing during London's 2012 Olympics. That's the full title of the video, kind of says it all. And that's a prediction made in a Rockefeller document. Now, this document isn't really a clairvoyant document. It's just a scenario. They're writing like a kind of science fiction scenario of the future, what the future could be, as if it had happened. So they're saying that there could be, you know, problems with climate change and stuff in the future, and this could have happened at the Olympics, as if it's a kind of science fiction scenario. Well, that's fine, but it's still a rather strange thing to write, isn't it? Now, this 13,000, how literal do we need to take that? Is that just a figure they plucked out of the air and put in there just to make it sound like a science fiction scenario, because you've got to put some sort of number in? Or could that be an actual number? I was discussing this with somebody this week. It's possible that there's a stadium where you would have that number in the audience, possibly. And that wouldn't be the main stadium, because that's going to have a bigger capacity. So unless it's only half full, maybe they attack one of the football venues or one of the smaller places like the Velodrome, possibly, which may have a smaller capacity than the main stadium. So we mustn't only look at the main stadium for anything like this. And, you know, we would condemn any terrorist attack on the Olympics of any kind anyway. But if there was an inside job, because the Rockefellers had written this, if they were kind of designing this as a document to then kind of have the thing actually happen as an inside job, and they put that number in, they may just be writing it in as a random number, but they may have an idea that that's a good amount. It's a lot, but at the same time it's a village, you know. It's like killing a village or killing a council ward in a city. It's big, but even 9/11, it's only 2,000 deaths. It's an apartment block full, or one residential street of deaths. It's in the scale of, you know, billions on the planet, it's not that much, horrible though it is, but it's enough to make a hell of a headline. yeah, we're looking a little bit into the logo, the strange 2012 logo, which it is alleged can be rearranged to look like the word Zion. Well, it can be. It takes a little bit of imagination to see it. It is true, it does do that. It resembles those tangram, a little bits of plastic you get in Christmas crackers sometimes, where you can move them around on and get a cat or a fish or whatever, and you get these pictures that sort of half look like something, and it does look like Zion. The dot is a bit of a question mark, you could say, because it's a square in the middle, and you may have to move that off the two to put it over the eye to make that look like an eye. And you may wonder, well, why does a capital I need to have a dot over it? Why did they bother to put that square in? So that's the only problem I got with that one, because the 2 makes an N anyway, and it still looks like a 2. It doesn't actually need that square on it to look like a 2. So if the square goes over the eye, it has been suggested by a video I was watching, a guy called Philip Bree, who's a lawyer, and he was talking on YouTube, and he suggested that the square did represent the square mile. And also the word Zion, again, I would have to look into this a lot more, but if it's written S-I-O-N, I think in lowercase there's a French-style accent going up on the I. So that could be what that is. It could be the accent over the I. But I don't know whether that spelling exists, if it's spelt with a Z or a Z, as they say in the States. And again, if it's all in capital letters, I don't believe you need an accent anyway on it. So it's a little bit questionable, but it does say that, certainly, if you rearrange it. So make of that what you will. Another point is that the rings represent, according to Philip Bree, the five-pointed pentagram, because there's five rings, and the colours of them represent the different directions. But if you look in the top row of three, it's three above two. The middle one is black, and that's satanic, because the other ones are coloured. So what they're saying is that the black one is satanic and it's binding the others. It's a bit like Lord of the Rings, one ring to bind them all. And it possibly that is even a true kind of reference here, you know, because Tolkien took a lot of imagery and stuff out of different traditions to write the Lord of the Rings. So, yeah, the black ring binds the other five. And if you see it in colour, and this picture is, this five-ring logo is in the O, which is like the world. So it's binding the world to the Olympics, which is itself is bound by the black satanic ring. The logo is designed at great expense, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds. I haven't got the exact figure here, by, I think, a guy called Wally Owens at Wolf Olin's design, graphic design company, under great secrecy, and revealed in 2007. And there was worry at the time that it would cause epileptic fits and stuff if it was seen on TV because of the weird colours and the weird sort of design of it. Which it may well do, I couldn't say. So Iran has apparently said the logo is racist, possibly because it is Zion, way it can be rearranged to say. So there's definitely a reference or two there. I think I'm more convinced by the five rings, to be honest. That definitely has a ring of truth about it. I think the Zion thing, it feels almost like a wry, rather unpleasant bit of humour that they've done just to sort of maybe make it refer to something, but it still looks like 2012, so you can take it either way, really. Yeah, obviously John Tapson and Toy Newton were talking at the Occulture Festival the other week after Ian R. Crane, and I went along to that and recorded it at the time, and they're very interesting about the esoteric symbols in London. So you've got the Olympics going on in East London. I don't think it's actually in the Square Mile, but it's not a million miles away from there. It's in Stratford, probably a little bit north of the actual Square Mile. But it's interesting how they got all this stuff in that same area going on. And, of course, David Icke said at the time when the Olympics was given to London that it was no surprise because it was some kind of centre of a New World Order goings-on. So as time gets near, it remains to be seen quite how literal some of these things are, whether they're just strange sort of imagery you can read into any logo, because everything has a precedence to it. Most things do have some sort of something they're based on in the past, and sometimes you just accidentally quote something you're not really intending to. But at the same time, when something this big has so much money thrown at it, you do tend to think, well, it has to be deliberate to some degree, because why wouldn't they design a logo and not make it look like that? They could make a much more friendly, bouncy logo saying 2012. And there have been other logos that don't have this in. I think there's one that's London 2012. It's a much nicer bit of typography, and I think looks better, and it's just a nice thing to look at. So why not use that one? Why use this funny squared off one? Remains to be seen, but we'll be listening and watching as things unfold. And we say, without qualification, we hope nothing happens at the Olympics apart from lots of sport, and we get a few gold medals, and the price of gold is always going up, so that may be good for the economy. And I'm hoping all these doom and gloom predictions are wrong, but if they're not, we want to know about them now, because we may be helping to stop them by mentioning them.
Information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.